everybody. Welcome to Kill the Bottle Podcast. I'm Eddie Zamora, the Yum Yum Foodie, and she's not in the room with me right now, so I'm a little saddened by it. But Megan, she's in the sound booth. She's right there, just not right next to me. I feel slightly, I don't know, nude without you here, Megan.
Aww.
But that is the kind of production quality you get when Megan leaves the room. It's very Three Stooges. It's the kids listening are like, what the fuck are the Three Stooges? Oh, yeah. It's very Three Stooges, but thankfully Megan is here to provide us with that exceptional production value. So thank you, Megan.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's welcome. Speaking of, it's called Kill the Bottle. We always like to talk about what we are drinking. Today, it's a really nice treat because we're going to get to drink multiple bottles. We're not killing all of them, guys. So, don't drink and drive it. It's Cinco de Drinko here in LA. But we're drinking wines from Bodega de Edgar in Paso Robles, California. Bodega de Edgar is a winery that I was lucky enough to have a friend of mine recommend to me. Visited late last year, and I just fell in love with the wines. And the winemaker, owner, proprietor, Edgar, is going to join us here on the show. Right now, Megan and I are sipping on his 2018 Tarragona, and Ed will dive deeper into that. But, for the wine nerds there, it's 54% Grenache, 23% Carignan, and then 23% Tempranillo. And it's from the Willow Creek District at the Paper Street Vineyard. So for you winos who like to read more about wine than just drink it, that's a little bit of the 411. And when Ed gets on, we'll definitely dive into I got to tell him how much I love that winery. Megan, what are you doing for Cinco de Drinko? It's Cinco de Mayo, guys.
I celebrate St. Patrick's Day, but
that seems like a more obvious celebration for you, Megan Elizabeth.
Why? Are you being racist? Is it because I'm white?
Yeah. No, it's exactly why you should be celebrating Cinco de Mayo. Because I can tell you, I'm not Mexican, but most of the Mexican people that I know don't give a flying F about Cinco de Mayo. That is the last holiday that they care about. It's for me, it's like stay home and, I don't know, watch whatever game that is on day.
On these, because I'm in a new big city, these kind of holidays, I am super nervous to be, like, in cars.
Right? Yeah.
That people are already crappy drivers here. And if you add tequila to that, I feel like I'm screwed.
Oh, it's true. And the irony is, growing up in Miami, there's, like, 10 Mexican people in Miami. Yet, they love to celebrate Cinco de Mayo. Cubans are just looking for an excuse to go and party and drink. 99.99999% don't know what Cinco de Mayo is about.
What is it about?
We're going to ask Edgar because I genuinely don't know.
Oh, exciting.
I don't know.
Is it like independence something? Oh, we're going to find out. No, he said no.
We'll find out. We'll find out. And if you think people in LA drive bad, let me introduce you to this little town in the southeast United States called Miami, Florida.
It is,
there's only one place I've been to. And I haven't been to India, and I know it's like nuts, the driving in India. But it's worse than, like, the Bahamas and Jamaica. When you go to the Bahamas and Jamaica, and the way people drive there, they're like maniacs. And Miami is a next level of lunacy because you don't expect that in the United States, A. And then, B, you don't expect the person who cut you off to then get angry for some reason. I don't know why, but they cut you off, and then they pull out a tire iron, and then they beat the hood of your car. And then somebody records them on Instagram and they go viral. But that's the equivalent of driving in South Florida. So definitely be glad you're not there. And we're recording early today so you can get home nice and safe from your Cinco de Drinko.
Well, just nice and safe to my nice and not safe place.
Well, whatever. You gotta pick and choose sometimes.
I know. Fucking Van Nuys. Fucking Van Nuys.
Hold on. How did you end up in Van Nuys? Because I need to figure this out. Did you just like, was it like Coming to America where he spun the globe around?
Yes.
He's like, oh, Queens.
Yes.
And that's where you, what did you do?
I owned a home back in Colorado and I wasn't sure if I was going to sell it. And so I was looking for like the cheapest, smallest place to get by for the year if I had to. And so, and this place is 17 minutes away from work. It's in the Valley. I hadn't lived in the Valley, and I just thought, I can do it for a year. I mean, the summers I came out here, I used to sleep in my car, or you sleep on people's couches. So I was like, this is a step up from that. But I ended up selling my house within 30 days. Shout out to Newt Weiler, best realtor in Colorado. I ended up selling my place in 30 days, and then I was stuck for the next 11 months in this shit box. That's the size of that room, with no kitchen, as we've all heard, no parking.
Yeah,
a homeless man sleeping in the laundry room, all the above.
And if you haven't heard the episode with the Cuban blogger Marisa Daniela, it ends up that Marisa had more amenities in Havana, Cuba, which is a third world country, than Megan has in her Van Nuys apartment. Which
we
is
did a comparison.
Yeah, we just and it's good to really get in touch with that. But you know what, Megan, that helps you grow, right? We have to start.
Up. It helps you grow.
We have to start from humble beginnings. At the end of the day, I don't know. I'm very proud of starting from a humble beginning, and I think you are too. You are a really hardworking person. For the folks of you that don't know, Megan is like she's like a little white female James Brown. She's the hardest working person in show business that I have ever met. I mean, for real.
Thank you.
Except, you know, you don't wave guns around and beat your wife. Not yet.
The day
not
is yet. Young.
Yeah, it is. It is. It is. It is young.
I could get married all in one day and start beating.
We're not in Vegas. Vegas, but you could.
We're close.
You could. You could drive there and start beating by 11:59. You
done
can really
and done.
Get a beat on. But Megan is one of the hardest working people. She's very humble and very like embarrassed whenever you say nice things to her. So I love telling her any compliments that people send me to tell her. So please send all the compliments so that I can slowly disperse them like a tube of toothpaste to Megan to make sure it doesn't get to her head too quickly, but just enough to like keep her from jumping off a bridge. So Megan, you are super hardworking and...
It's my awkward crickets.
It was awkward crickets.
Thank you. Well, we did get some news that we won't have to share it, obviously, but we might be like videoing some of these eventually. And
that's right.
I'm scared because I've always said I have like the face for podcasting, you know.
No,
so now I'm gonna
get
have
the
to,
heck out of here.
I'm gonna have to get
Please.
Dressed.
Craig Kilborn flirted with you.
Oh my god, he's so cute.
He flirted with you, Lord Kilby. Was there in his with the stances and his like Dracula cave. It was amazing. Part of what resonated so much with the story of our guest on the show today is that struggle, that story, that believing in yourself. You know, at the end of the day, we joke a lot, but there's always great opportunities to learn from everybody around us. And I tell you guys at home, learn from everybody. Take that experience. I had a conversation with this guy at his winery, and I was enthralled in his story to the point that I joined the wine club where he sells and makes his wine. And I think I'm along this journey for life. I want to welcome to Kill the Bottle podcast. I consider him a friend, Mr. Edgar Torres. Good. Edgar Torres, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's kind of fun to actually sit and not be hosting you at the winery, and we can actually just chill and talk.
Which is funny because Ed is such a great host. That's one of the cool things too about him is he is so humble. You kind of almost like pull it out of him to let him so that he lets you know that it's his place, because he'll just be there and just hanging out and taking care of people and just really. The level of hospitality that you have at his...
Everyone's like, who's this regular?
Yeah. They're like, fuck, this guy does not leave. He's here every day. I think you should hire some employees and not let them know who you are.
Yeah.
That would be the greatest thing ever, and we'll record that. But thanks for being here, Ed. He drove all the way down from Paso Robles today, 3 hours on... Probably longer than 3 hours. On Cinco de Drinco, so thanks again for being here.
For sure. It is Cinco de Drinco. We don't give a damn about that.
By we, who are we referring to? Because I don't want to say you people, you know? I really don't want to offend anybody.
I don't want to say that.
What are we referring to by we?
I'm as white as they come.
you're like a guppy, practically.
Yeah,
you're transparent.
No, I grew up kind of having to correct everybody because, like, Cinco de Mayo is a small battle that we won in Mexico City to kick out the French from the city and just kind of take them out of control of the city itself, not out of the country, because to have our independence, which falls in September 16, we kicked out the Spaniards. That's who we got our independence from. But we liberated ourselves out of the city of Mexico by kicking the French out of the city of Puebla.
But do you celebrate in September?
Yes, that's the big
which is
one.
Funny because
that's
you know you got to think about one. It. They don't speak French in Mexico, so that's a much smaller battle that we're celebrating here on May 5th. You speak Spanish in Mexico,
yeah.
So you kicked out the fuckers that changed the language, in your entire country, which was, I'm assuming, predominantly speaking indigenous languages before you know before the Spaniards.
No, for sure. And the funniest thing is that I mean the Spaniards were the ones that we kicked out, and we actually do make a big deal. It's a big weekend down there. But here, nobody really recognizes it, and we try to, but nobody really pays attention because we don't sell it commercially as Cinco de Mayo does.
Don't you think it's kind of ironical that you kicked out Spaniards from your country, you celebrate that, yet you make Spanish varietals for Bodega de Edgar wines?
It runs in the blood.
You just like, you enjoy a beating, I guess. What is this? Like, so Bodega de Edgar, and he'll explain, he owns a few different labels, but Bodega de Edgar is predominantly Spanish varietals?
So I started Bodega de Edgar back in 2007 with the mindset that being in Paso Robles, which was a small wine country at the time, focused around Zinfandel and Cab, and then the evolution aspect that was happening rapidly was around the Rhone varieties like Syrah and Grenache and Mourvèd and a few other fun whites like Viognier and Roussanne. And so I had the opportunity to go work and clean after some of the guys there in town, and I fell in love with the production part of it. I just stumbled upon this grape called Grenache in France, but it's a Spanish grape called Garnacha, and I just fell in love with it. And so I kind of dropped out of school, threw my little college savings I had into four barrels of Grenache, and right off the bat, I just called it Garnacha. I decided to call it from where I descended from, decided it needed to be a little bit different so I wouldn't have that I would have a little bit of a competitive edge or not a competitive edge by doing it that way. Because everyone else that I was going to be working with in town was focused on the Rhone variety. So my last name being Torres was another kind of reason why I focused on the Spanish varieties. Torres is a big name in the Spanish wine world. So, yeah, I decided to focus on the Spanish grapes around this and then evolved now to paying my homage to the regions that influenced my journey.
How are you digging the wine over there, Megan? Megan, so I have to check in on her because normally I could see how empty her glass is. She's right. You got a little.
I was thinking I still have to work after this, but I really don't have much to do because my boss is out of town, one of them. So I don't know. Maybe I'll just start chugging.
It's not about chugging. So we're drinking this 2018 wine. And for those of you who don't know a ton about wine, in general, the younger the wines are, sometimes they might not be ready to drink. I could say that for not these wines, but I could say that for a lot, especially a lot of what they call old world wines, European wines. They're not designed to do that. They're designed to kind of hold on to a little bit. And one thing I love about even this particular one we're drinking now, the 2018 Tarragona, is we just opened this wine and it's already got these like nice smooth tannins. You can it's like the fruit is there. You could taste the fruit, but it's not a fruit bomb, if that makes sense.
Not at all. The 2018 Tarragona is kind of named around the city that I use as home base when I go over to Spain during the summer, south of Barcelona, which is also the county name to the region that houses the Montsant region and the Piurat region. And the Montsant and Piurat region are very similar. They just differ in elevations. The varieties that they're predominantly focused on producing there is Garnacha and Cardeña. And so this is our Garnache-driven or Garnacha-driven blend. The cool thing about it for me is that Garnacha can be, you know, very floral, red fruits, spicy. It has some good tannins, but not overtly big tannins like Cabernet or Merlot tend to offer. But this wine is youthfully approachable. It is definitely produced structurally to age. We had the opportunity to build ourselves to have the luxury to bottle the wine and let it sit in the bottle for 6 months before we release it. So we released it in November after 6 months in the bottle, and it's drinking very well. It's approachable.
Yes.
But definitely can lay down for a few more years.
There may have been a few that made their way back to my home after,
Shocking. After, color me shocked.
Yeah. Megan shocked.
Look at me shocked.
She's very shocked. Was there a bottle of wine that you had? And I know I read your bio and you worked as a server at a restaurant, but was there any wine that you had that you're like, this is the wine I want to make my wine like at first, before you got your feet wet?
Well, I had the opportunity to be working in restaurants, and that's how that was kind of the gateway into the industry. But it's the humble beginnings of actually being able to afford wines. So I used to go to Trader Joe's. There was a bottle they had my last name on it, Torres, and it was like a $12, $15 bottle called Sangre de Toro.
Yeah.
And it was a Garnacha blend with the Tempranillo and so on. And that was fun, and it just kind of got me inspired to see my last name on a bottle and kind of like, you know, I'm already doing this. I can kind of do it. I'm not going to be able to use my last name, but I have to name it something differently. But there is one producer of my that stands out that really resonates with stylistically. I try to emulate production protocol as he does, but the varieties he's working are drastically different because they're Grenache and Syrah focused, and that is Sinequinon. Sinequinon was that wine that I just saw it, tasted it, and enjoyed it. And I'm a wine club member of them now for, I don't know, close to 10 years now. And it was one bottle that was very, very, very well put together. I think it was around 2006 when I had it. This nice gentleman walked into the restaurant I was working at called Villa Creek. And he walked in with this like 1999 Syrah. And actually, it was a 2000 Syrah. And he just shared this with me. He had me decant it. And I was like, I was blown away by the bottle. I had no idea. Then I did the research, found out Manfred Krenko was a former immigrant who came in and kind of started with like La Brea Bakery, Beverly Hills Cheese Shop, and a Campanilis, which is no longer there. Mm-hmm. But I read about him, and I just kind of like, that was inspirational to see another immigrant get here and just build a little empire for himself and a big name in the wine world. So I was like blown away. So I decided to kind of do my own thing, following the roots, the Spanish blood. And I made a wine kind of similar to the first one that he ever made, and that is called Mis Pasos, which is 100%
my spouse?
Mis Pasos.
Oh, Mis Pasos. I love
my
it. I
paces,
could listen.
My steps.
Sorry, I was trying.
Yeah, well, you know,
I'm trying to learn.
Just because I'm Mexican doesn't mean I have that many spouses.
Okay. I feel like all of them. That's what this is named for.
Which is funny. Ed made a really interesting point it's kind of like a rule of thumb for restaurants, and I think a lot of people don't know about this. When you take a bottle of wine to be corked at a restaurant, corked means you brought your own bottle of wine and the restaurant is opening for you. There's two things that you should know. One, first of all, make sure that that bottle of wine is not on their wine list. It is extremely rude. And I don't mean they could have a different vintage on their wine list, but not the exact bottle of wine that you're bringing in. Okay, that's just something you don't do. Secondly, when you have the waiter or the sommelier open that bottle of wine, you have to always offer them a taste. Yeah. You just ensure, because that is just courtesy, that is what you do, and they may not have had that wine before, and then they can talk about that wine to somebody else. I mean, it's just something that you do. I had to put it out there because I see it happen all the time where I'll go to a restaurant and I'll see the server decant a nice bottle of wine. I'm like, dude, you didn't even offer the freaking, like, even if you do it at the bar, offer to the bartender, please. Anyway.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I could listen to your voice all day. It's very soothing. Just so you know. I was listening. Oh, and then the accent with when you're doing the words.
Hey,
the
special his wife is a white woman.
Sorry, okay. Oh, whoa. So you're saying there's a chance. No, I'm just joking.
There's always a chance. Yeah. It might be very, 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 very small.
Like one in a million.
What? But I still got a chance.
But you're saying there's a chance.
That's right.
The bottle that I created, like the first vintage of establishing Bodega de Edgar, I was trying to kind of emulate a similar blend to the first bottle of wine that Manfred Krenko ever made. And he made one that was called Black and Blue. It was 50% Merlot, 50% Syrah. I tried to make the same blend. It wasn't really working. And I kind of got all samples from a bunch of my barrels, and I found the Tempranillo. Once I sprinkled the Tempranillo into it, it just kind of spoke to me, and I'm like, okay, cool. This is a unique blend. No one else makes it. It's delicious. It speaks to me. So that's one of my staple blends that I started with, and it's the most popular blend because every year we like to showcase a little bit of our family on the list.
So I just want to dive a little bit into your stories. I've been privy to seeing a bit of the outside of the wine industry, a bit of the inside of the wine industry, whether it's been Napa or a trip I did to Italy where I got to meet producers. And a lot of times, yes, you know, it's the family name on this wine. But it's a family name that's been on this wine for 300 years. It's a family name that's been on that bottle of tequila for 200 years. Mm-hmm. How did you have the balls, or what did it look like
cojones,
from somebody?
I think you meant.
I did mean
you're
cojones.
Welcome.
Thank you. How did you have the huevos, cojones, to dive into a world that has this, like, I don't know, this lineage, a lot of it behind it, and then what did that look like for you? You said you took out your college savings. Like, what is that? I'm Ed.
It wasn't that much.
That's what I'm saying. So yeah, but people think that it takes this astronomical amount. You made it work for you.
I mean, I had no idea what I was really doing because I was about 25 years old when I jumped into it.
Wow.
And I think that I was young enough and ambitious enough and blessed to be that young that I knew that, like, hey, if worse comes to worse, you know, like my dad always said, there's always going to be tortilla y sal that we can eat every day. That's his saying. And for me, the funnest thing is, like, I was working in a time in Paso Robles where the Roan Revolution explosion was occurring. I am so blessed and thankful that, like, all the guys that I hang out with and a lot of the guys that I look up to still, and then I now get to hang out with them and drink every once in a while, are my friends, are some of, like, the most cultiest followed wineries, very prestige. They have their beautiful aesthetic stuff. But we all started in a warehouse, and that was kind of cool. I just went into this warehouse, and I saw a bunch of guys that look like skaters, surfers, and little hippies just making their own wine. They didn't care about their appearances. And in my head, I had the French appearance of, like, you know, sport code. Like, when you go to Napa, you get, like, this fancy kind of snobby kind of atmosphere going on. And so it is intimidating. But in Paso Robles, it's not. Like, you see winemakers walking down the street, and you wouldn't even call them a winemaker because they're just dressed like everyday Joe. So for me, those guys were so inviting, and their enthusiasm, their passion when they came to talking about their wines really captivated my attention. And it was very normal and natural for me to just kind of, like, follow them and fall in love with this industry.
Well, that's one of the things that really connected with me and Paso Robles, because there's a lot of French people that have left France to make wine in Paso Robles. And part of the reason is that I get, and please correct me if I'm wrong, is what Edgar just said. It's that skater, that hippie. And what that means as a winemaker is there aren't these rules. And there's certain rules that if you're not doing it that way in France, you can't make the wine that you want to make. So these guys just pieced out. And they're in Paso Robles because you mentioned the Rhone explosion or the Rhone revolution. You know, Rhone is a wine region in France that is they're known for making their GSM wines, which is Grenache, Syrah, Mourvèdre. But these guys, girls, whoever, found the opportunity to come to a place that grows the same kind of grapes that they're used to making wine with. But fuck you, they can do whatever they want and not have to follow these strict rules.
That was the most captivating part for a lot of the guys that moved in. Stefan Assel from La Venture is the main epitome of the French guys that came in saying, I want to blend Syrah and Cab because the French world, they're so regulated that Syrah and Cab cannot be blended. They're two different regions, so they cannot. So,
only in your house.
Yeah.
Just pour the two bottles in, like, woo!
So he moved in doing that, and then that was kind of the cool thing. In 2005, we had this event called the Hospice de Rhone, and I was so lucky to be at the right time, at the right place a lot of the times. And this time, this year, we had a bunch of Spaniards that came in. Alvaro Palacio was in town. Jorge Ordoño is one of the biggest importers, brought, like, Juan Gil and then Muga and producers. We also had a bunch of guys from the Puyat region. They came in, Claude de Labatt, Claude Mogador, Daphne with Close Edomos was there.
Talk dirty to me. Just keep going.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Dude, this, like, is great. I
love all these wineries that he's mentioning, so please.
Yeah. Like, and so this wineries came in with the same mindset as the Westside Paso boys had, like, you know, respecting the land, farming biodynamic, organic, natural fermentations, on fine, on filter. But then, like, they were saying all this shit in Spanish. Like, I was able to, like, drink with these guys from Spain, and they were talking to me and telling me how they were doing everything. And it sounded so similar to the Westside Paso boys, but they were blending, like, Cabernet and Grenache, or Merlot and Grenache. And, like, I'm like, what are you guys doing? Like, this is cool.
What's, like, Paso's almost like the pineapple on pizza of wine places. People in France were like, no, I want pineapple on my fucking pizza. No, you cannot put pineapple on your pizza. You have to go to Central Coast of California to put pineapple on your pizza.
I come in and put jalapenos too.
Very true. Very true. What are we drinking now?
And we brought in the carbonic maceration Grenache from Denner Vineyard.
Okay, explain.
Super exciting because it's like fresh, it's bright, acid-driven, a bunch of red fruits on the bouquet and on the palate. This is a 2020. Like you said earlier, you want to age wines, but sometimes when you make a wine this fresh and this vibrant with this high energy, you want
to
share it.
Ready to go. Now, when I think of ready-to-go wine, automatically, Beaujolais pops into mind.
Yeah.
It is something like this for the folks listening at home with that same kind of intention of, like, guys, don't buy a Beaujolais that's 10 years old. Don't do it. If you see it on the shelf dusty, don't think you got excited that you got a 10-year-old wine for $2. There's a reason. Yeah. It's $2.
Beaujolais Nouveau is a production of wine from the same year it got harvested. It got bottled that same fall and released in that winter time. This is kind of a similar concept. This spent about 7 months aging in barrels. We started in a stainless steel tank, and then we put it into big 500-liter barrels. So there was a minimal amount of oak interaction with it. It was just the vibrancy and the purity of the fruit from Denner that is just so expressive. And this is similar to the first Grenache I ever made. So this is kind of exciting for me to, like, rejuvenate myself by bringing something exciting like that to the table, because my wines are fun, they're big, they're hefty, they need meals, or they need a little bit of time in the bottle before you can drink them.
Well, it's funny that you say hefty, need meals. There's a wine that Edgar makes, and it's the first one that I had, and it's his Toro de Paso. And it's is it always been predominantly Tempranillo?
Just
to make sure. Okay.
It is.
So I have a dear friend in Miami who listens to the show, and his wife loves to say that she didn't like Tempranillo. So of course, what we do is I tell him about Edgar's wine, and I tell him how he makes this very, I don't want to say inky, but it does not look like your standard Spanish Rioja Tempranillo or your Ribera del Duero, even though you're making it, of course, from the same type of grapes grown in a different region. Right. And we make sure that we open a bottle of that wine for his wife and not tell her what it is because, you know, perception is reality. So we just really don't want to tell her anything that it is. And she inhaled it. Okay. She wasn't high. She inhaled it, loved it, gets on the phone with me to try to have me order her wine because she hasn't been to the winery so that I can order them wine and have it sent to them. And then, of course, her husband divulges, that was Tempranillo, the wine you swear you don't like. So is there something in your intention when you were making something like your Tempranillo to not like, are you paying homage to Spanish wine, or were you creating? Because it does, obviously, I love Tempranillo, but it does taste different.
So I make three Tempranillos. One is always fruit forward, youthfully. We bottle it after, like, being in the barrel for 18 months. That's our regular Tempranillo. What you fell in love with and I love a lot is Toro de Paso. Toro is a region in Spain, west of Valladolid, west of Ribera del Duero. It is very similar setting to the east side of Paso Robles. It gets warm. It makes big, rich, high-octane, high-concentrated, powerful wines. So for me, this clone is actually from the Toro region too. So we're growing it in Paso, and it becomes that big, abstracted, just concentrated, hefty wine. And so I keep the old world in mind, but I have to embrace Paso Robles. I have to embrace California. We do get a lot more sunshine than a lot of the European nations. And we just naturally get that, you know, concentration there and the ripeness that we want. And I get naturally, that's kind of one of my pride and joys. I make the wines as natural as possible. I don't mess with them. The only thing I leave into fermentation is either the stem and then the selection of barrels that I use. But
now, for the folks listening at home who don't know what clone means, what are you referring to? You're saying this clone comes from that region.
So just like we can grow different kinds of apples, you know, there's your Granny Smiths and whatever, your Fijis.
Honey Crisp.
Exactly.
That's where it's
that
at.
One too.
That's where it's
agreed.
At.
Agreed.
That's your choice.
Fiji.
No, don't you Fiji me. It's Honey Crisp, motherfucker.
So that's serious the same about thing my apples. It's like for every particular grape that we're farming and working with, their lineage behind where they came from or what is kind of where it's grown the most. So this is a total clone. So this is kind of a fun clone of the Tempranillo world that I love to play with because the Toro region is very similar to East Side Paso and a little bit of West Side Paso. Kind of West Side Paso looks more like Ribera del Duero. And I can say that because I've been there. I go there often enough in the last 5 years to be able to see it. I have the ability to play with the growing season being longer than the European nations. So we do concentrate the wines a little bit more. They do become a little more fruit forward, where a lot of the Paso Robles wines are youthfully enjoyed. But trust me, I always tell people Paso wines need 3 years in a bottle minimum.
Now, did you, when you started out, because again, you worked in restaurants, you started kind of hanging around with folks making wine, you started learning about wine, but when the time came down for you to make your first wine, did you have anybody help consult with you or kind of maybe give you just a few pointers through that, or you just said, fuck it, I'm going to do this my way and see what happens?
Well, the fun thing about it is that, like, everybody was, you know, doing some big concentrated big wines in Paso, and they were all trying to capture Robert Parker's attention with big fruit forward big oak wines and stuff. And it's kind of funny that I brought this bottle because I wanted to share this. I'm so excited about our 100% Grenache from Denner Vineyard, carbonic maceration. It's light, it's fresh, it's fruit forward, but it's a lean fighting machine with the acidity keeping it high energy. I love it. And that was kind of like the first Grenache I ever made. It didn't really have a lot of oak. It wasn't super concentrated. It didn't have the density that my other wines have. So I was very blessed to be at that place at the right time. I had a friend of mine who was mentoring me a little bit, and he was kind of helping me because I had Jacob Toth who helped me kind of learn how to clean and ferment and stuff. But then I had this other guy who had a crazy palate, and he was showing me wines from all over the world and showing me wines from his friends. And then he saw me fall in love with Grenache. And it just happened that in 2005, it was a heavy cropped year, and Mr. Chris Cherry from Via Creek Cellars showed up with a little extra fruit, and my buddy spoke for like 3 extra tons, and my buddy looked at me, he's like, how much money do you have? And I'm like, let me go check the bank account. So I ran up the street, I had like a couple $1,000, and he's like, that'll give you a ton and a half. Give yourself 4 barrels, because a ton and a half will yield you about 4 barrels worth of wine. And that's how it just kind of started.
So folks at home who are right now on their dog coin, watching their money go up and down and up and down 17 times today, chances are you might be able to buy a ton and a half of fruit. I don't know what you're going to do with it, but at least because the wine business, at least from the consumer's perspective, has this kind of it can't be me vibe to it. That, you know, you're like, I love wine. Yeah. It can't be me. And not to say that it came easy, because obviously it didn't come easy to Edgar. You put in the work. You learned about it. You became passionate about it. But you didn't need to take out, at least at that time, 17 loans from a bank to at least get started with this project and this passion that has now become Bodega de Edgar.
I find myself saying this word. It is the catalyst of my life. I fell in love with it early on. It's something that I love to produce. It's something that I love to buy. It's something I love to share. Whether it's mine, I like to buy and I like to share it. So the wine culture in the States has changed drastically from when I was 22 years old. I'm 40 now, so 18 years gone by. It's so much fun to see the younger generation being so informed and so into it. And for me, more so than anything, I think Paso Robles has done a really good job of making everybody comfortable that they're accepted to the table.
Yeah. And speaking of accepted to the table, one of the things I like to share is the price points of Paso Robles wine. I feel in my experience, and I've only been to Paso. I say only, you know, folks. I've been very lucky. I've only been there five times. It's a 3-hour drive for me. It's not that far, but I've only been there five times. And I mean, it didn't take me five times of being there to understand that you have a lot of quality, and then you also have a lot of you get what you pay for. I've been to Napa a lot more times than I've been to Paso Robles, and I love Napa Valley. I was just there. When I was there a few weeks ago, I was like, I'm in fucking heaven. This is amazing. The wines were all amazing. But, you know, put it into effect, into the thought process that I didn't pay for any of that stuff. So when you are paying for all of that stuff and you are paying for all of that stuff in Paso Robles, I feel that you have this really wonderful experience in Paso. Paso feels to me almost like I think maybe Napa felt in the 1970s or in the early 80s, where people were just starting to kind of find out about it. And I love feeling like you're in a fledgling stage of that place, and you're obviously in a great time period to be there.
I'm super blessed to be there right now. And the reason I also diversify myself in the last 2 years is that Bodega de Edgar has been established now. It has a great following. The wine club is growing tremendously on a yearly basis. We're starting to sell out of SKUs as we bottle them. They're already spoken for by the wine club. So we have that stress of demand and supply. The great thing about it is that Bodega de Edgar started very humbly offering everything. Because of my humble upbringing, I was able to offer the wines a little bit more affordable, and I kind of created it where it has a demand now. But it's getting into that price point where it still over-delivers, but it's in the $60 range now. Now, when I'm talking about like Paso Robles is that wholesome, welcoming community, I decided to take a step back and look at like, hey, I fell in love with the Spanish regions, and I'm paying my respect and my homage to the regions by naming the wines that I make now after those regions. And then I just look back and I'm like, you know what? I got to pay my respect to Paso Robles because I'm still traveling the country and trying to tell people where Paso Robles is. So I created this brand called Straight Outta Paso purposely to keep that nice $30 and $50 under bottle. So I have this new brand called Straight Outta Paso that is dedicated to the Zinfandel world, the Cabernet world, and also playing with the Rhone varieties that really kind of changed the whole dynamics of the wine country that Paso Robles has become.
Yeah, and one of the things, guys, when you know, if you jump on Instagram and check out Edgar's Instagram, and you see, and so Bodega de Edgar
is the main Instagram for this project that we're talking and drinking.
And you see the labeling, the artwork, you can tell that everything is well thought out, and that's something as you could be just from hearing Edgar speak, he cares about what he's doing. And the first time I was in Paso that I met him was when he talked to me about this Straight Outta Paso project and that evolution. And I think as a consumer, it's nice to know the same way that I like there's a famous wine from Spain called Flor de Pingus. And of course, my Cubans and Mariby be like, bro, he just said pinga. No, I'm not saying pinga. I'm saying Flor de Pingus. It's a different pinga's dick. By the way, sorry,
well,
not
Richard,
like penis. Flor de Pingus, and I can't remember that. But the name of the winemaker is a guy named Peter, and his last name eludes me right now.
Also, another name for dick.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Megan.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, thank you.
I'm worth something.
She's
over here.
Already always listening. I love it. And he makes a secondary label. And it's spelled PSI. I believe they pronounce it PSI. And, you know, Flor de Pingus, it'll be $100, over $100 a bottle. But you can get this secondary label that the same winemaker makes, and it's $35, $40. I know Jose Andres carries it at every single one of his restaurants as like the reasonable, great bottle of wine. So it's good to know that you have a product that not everybody has that daily wine being the $60, the $50 and change bottle, though they're obviously worth it. They're great. I'm not making a fucking commercial for Ed. He's here because I love the fucking wines, and he was kind enough to drive down and be with us. But it's good to know that there's alternatives that are like your Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Monday wine. Sorry, I drink every day. That don't have to be the wine that your special bottle. You know?
No, for sure. I mean, like, I'm not just a producer enthusiastically in love with what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. I'm also an enthusiast consumer. I belong to several wine clubs in the community of
Wow. I was going to ask that question, actually. So do you go and get other people's wines like religiously and
he's a supporter.
Study them? Okay.
So my wine club's currently, like as we speak, I got to go pick up my dinner vineyard wine club. I buy fruit from them as well. And I kind of, you know, I love what Anthony Young is doing there. Chris Cherry, one of my early on mentors, is doing a really good job with his wine. So I'm a member there. I'm a member at Loventure. I buy Saxums because he was a great inspiration early on. And we used to hang out a lot early on and just kind of looking up to Justin Smith has been always great.
I still haven't had his wine yet, by the way. This is like a $200 bottle of wine. From the Paso region. And it's funny because I want to not like it. And then all of my friends that have had it are like, no, it's fucking good.
So, it's good. Yeah. It's good. Yeah. And that speaks to the region and the quality of the wines that we're producing there. Like, I mean, his most expensive bottle is $145.
I thought it was more than that. Okay,
most,
my bad.
Most of the bottles, if you're on the wine club, on his mailing list that gets the ability to buy the wines, most of the bottles are $98. Like the most expensive, there's like two of them, they're like $145. And so I believe in the region. I believe in the guys that influenced me early on. I love to see what they're doing because we all are evolving with our wines as our wines evolve as well. And I mean, Manfred Krenkel from San Equinon, which I mentioned earlier, I belong to his mailing list, to his main mailing list. And then, you know, I have family working up in Napa. So I go up to Napa a lot. I love Hugo Maldonado up there. He's been helping me making some Chardonnay and some Cab. But we're making Chard and Cab under $100 a bottle still from up there. And so that goes into my Songs project, which is my higher end.
Which was the next thing I was going to ask you about, yeah.
So I'm trying to be a crowd pleaser always. So if you can afford $30, then I'm going to give you $30 and over deliver for that. If you're going to be able to afford a $50 to $60, then I'm going to give you the Bodega de Edgar, which will over deliver for that. And I get that compliment a lot. And some people think it's kind of productive for the business. But from where I started, man, dirt floors, jumped the border at 8 years old with a backpack, I'm pretty happy with my life right now. And I know it's going in a great direction. So I want to start catering to, yeah, the riches, the Joneses and everything. So, you know, like I have this other passion of higher end wine that I've been buying myself and collecting. I can do that too.
So he mentioned these his project called the Song Wines, and I've been lucky to try a few of them when I've been up at the winery. And literally it's about songs that inspire each particular wine, each particular SKU, or what does that look like? Is it an album? Is it a song?
Well, it's called Songs Wines. So if you're listening to this, there's not a website. So the only way you can get it is calling Bodega de Edgar or find Songs Wine on Instagram. It's the only way you can get a hold of it. I'm only making about 100 cases per each wine, which is nothing.
Guys, that's nothing. That's like 100 cases. So to put into perspective, that Robert Mondavi wine that you see at the grocery store, I think they make like 25,000 cases a day of that wine. So this is okay. It's not much.
The whole reason of making songs is to pay my respect to the French varieties that I fell in love with and the French varieties that trained me to become a winemaker, who I'm kind of become now. But every year I always felt there was a different playlist. Since I was 22, I remember listening to the Smiths, Blink 182, to Green Day, and the Ramones, and Santana, Ray Charles, and to like all the way to Nipsey Hussle. We have like, you know, Dilated People, to all the way to some of the Mexicans like Vicente Fernandez and so on. So I've had so many songs in my head playing, like just playing over and over from memory of like long hours, just finding inspiration to kind of finish the day. So I created Songs Wines to pay my respect to the songs that have motivated me. And every year is a different playlist. The varieties of the grapes that I'm focused on are constant. That's Syrah, Grenache, Petit Syrah, Cabernet Franc, Merlot, and Cabernet Sauvignon. All 100% to each other.
And if I have a bottle of Song that's delivered to me, is it like I need to listen to NWA while I drink this, or is it, or you know what I mean? Is it the kind of thing where like you were motivated by that album when you made this or is there any kind of literature that I get to help guide me through this boozy experience?
The whole fun thing about
for Megan, please, because we need guidance for Megan and her booze experiences.
The whole thing between like the comparison between a song and a bottle of wine for me is always a time capsule. It encapsulates that memory, that moment, that person, that reason or celebration of playing that song. It gets you pumped. It brings you down. It mellows you out or whatever. It takes you back. You can turn on the radio and there's that song that comes on and you like, you're calling whoever because it reminds you of them or whatever. Or it takes you back to that moment when you first heard it, or it was such a strong memory that it kind of takes you back for that, right? When it comes to talking about wine, it's like we always ask, what's that bottle? What's that one bottle, right? But we also have the reasoning of like collecting wines and then really putting a focus on aging some wines. And if you've taken care of this bottle of wine, you're only going to bring it out for that moment, mm-hmm. with that person, at that place, and for that meal. So that's kind of the whole thing for me, is there's a correlation between music and wine when it comes to sharing it with.
Well, I tell people like wine is kind of a vacation, and I'll tell you my reasoning behind this. Whenever you go to a restaurant or you went to a friend's house or you hung out with your best friend and you had a bottle of wine, it doesn't matter what that bottle of wine cost. Leave that out of the picture. You had a great experience. Let's say you did, and you loved the wine and what that means to you. Well, go and pay for a vacation and see how much that costs. But every time you have that bottle of wine, whether it costs $30 or $100, you are reliving that little vacation, that moment you had, that special moment that it resonates with you. And that's how I kind of justify certain prices for certain kinds of wine. I think with wine, you're paying rent. You're paying, you know, how long did you keep it for us? How long is it ready for us to drink? But you're paying for a heritage. You're paying for a particular slice of earth. You're paying for a time period. And that's why I encourage folks that a bottle of wine can be that vacation. I know that during the pandemic, a bottle of wine was my vacation. A bottle of wine that I took out and I opened up, I remember where I got it. I remember who I was with when I drank it the first time, because everything that I have, it wasn't the first time I drank it. It was always I tasted it, I liked it, and I got something. And just do that. Give yourself the opportunity to relive a moment and know that regardless of what's happening around you, you can have your own little world, your own little sphere with that bottle, that glass of wine.
I think, I mean, for me, for sure, you're speaking to me in so many ways, because when it comes to, I have over a thousand bottle collection now.
Are you a hoarder?
I am kind of.
Are we going to see you on, is it Bravo? I don't know where the fuck is hoarding.
What is it?
Are we going to see you on Annie?
Yeah.
Sorry.
But it'll be the bougiest hoarder ever.
I like that.
I mean, like,
that's the name of the show. Bougiest hoarder ever. It's a competition show.
My God, he's sleeping on caviar.
Yeah. And sipping on Dom
Perignon. He has a lazy boy on 30 cans of Beluga caviar.
Oh, my God.
All right, sorry.
No, I think I love what wine has been doing now slowly to this society of what we live in. I think the old world, I love going to Spain purposely to get inspired, to hang out with the guys that inspired me. And now I have the opportunity to drink with them and stuff. But it's like, I like being in the plaza. And I like, before you know it, there's like 10 bottles of wine and we don't finish them all.
The city center in wherever you are in Spain is called La Plaza, just for the most part. Sorry. So you folks at home, yeah.
For sure. The town center is where the life is where everything happens, is where everybody gathers. And we drink wine there and it doesn't affect us as much as we do here. This 9 to 5, freaking Monday through Friday, like rushing to one thing to another, it kind of does kill us a little bit that we don't really get to slow down with an alcohol consumption beverage, like wine does. Everybody still has the stigma of marketing with tequila. It's shots, 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 shots. No, there's some really good tequila to like sip on, but there's something fun about wine that it brings out conversations that otherwise you wouldn't.
Well, that's one thing that I like about wine is that, I know they have the Coravin now. If you're not familiar with a Coravin, it's this device that allows you to kind of pour open a glass out of an older bottle of wine, let's say, or a wine that you don't want to have the whole bottle of, and still somewhat keep your bottle fresh, it will replace the wine inside a bottle with like an inert gas. So it doesn't oxygenate the water, oxidize the wine. But I think one of the beauties of a bottle of wine is like, shit, we opened it.
Yeah.
It's got to go.
Yeah.
You know, a bottle of tequila or a bottle of bourbon or scotch or rum or whatever, it doesn't have to go.
No.
There's something beautiful in like, well, fuck, this is our one, because wine evolves with oxygen consistently.
Yeah.
So like, you know, I can open up a tequila and cork it back up and put it back on the shelf. It's going to taste the same. Exactly. And I'm not refined enough to be able to taste the distinction in that. In a wine bottle? Bullshit. If you put that wine bottle back, cork it, or open it up 2 days later, it will taste very different than it did, unless you're shit-faced, like, you know, you might be at that point. But it's just, that's the case. That's the beauty of it, is like, it's a time capsule in a bottle. Let's get it. Hurry up and let's get it done.
Well, the funnest thing about for wine, so for me, is when you open it, there's not necessarily a rush to get it through. You can probably leave some for the next day and it'll be different from the day that you open it, right? But the whole idea of like popping a bottle of wine and sitting there with a friend and just sipping on it and having a conversation is something that you can kind of elevate the experience a little bit more than rushing it with like a spirit or getting silly with the – I mean, do you really have deep conversations with the beer?
No. No, and I mean, like, and with a bottle of rum, dude, a bottle of rum to me is that friend that you went to high school with that you're 40, dude, and you're still doing the same shit you did 20 years ago.
Like Bacardi and cola? Like,
and
no.
I love it. But wine evolves, and I think as human beings, there's something nice to see an evolution in something, I guess, besides ourselves. Megan, would you drink a little bit more of that? Because I want to go pour you a tear.
Pour me a tear.
I want to pour you what is here, not pour you a tear.
You said pour me a tear.
That's like, what you heard.
Yeah. In fact, come pour me.
Please, ask Edgar.
We're going to have a rapid fire time. Let's liven it up a little bit.
For sure.
Are you ready to answer some questions?
Yes.
What I want you to do when I ask these questions, I just want you to go with whatever the first thing you said. Go crazy.
Wow.
The first question. Are you ready?
Yep.
Texting or talking? Which one?
Text.
I'm getting force-fed. I was enjoying the wine. All right, favorite day of the week?
The one that I get off.
When is that?
I don't know.
Never. Favorite city in the U.S. besides the one you live in?
San Francisco.
Oh, interesting. Same state.
Yep.
Nickname your parents used to call you?
Javi.
Javi! Last song you downloaded?
Dude, really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Kill the Bottle podcast. He downloaded Kill the Bottle podcast.
It's a song. You fuck.
I have that in the car, by the way.
So. Good. Thank you.
No, it's jeez. Wow.
Jeez, wow. I haven't heard that one.
It's a good song. I wrote it.
Can I look at my phone and cheat?
Yeah, okay. Cheat away. I'll edit this so it seems like you just rapid fired it.
She'll edit it. So you said cheat next to other white woman.
I can edit really well. Magically, he was single. My chances went up.
Turn Up Dial by Dropkick Murphys.
Oh, I love the Dropkick Murphys. Oh my God. You're whiter than you think.
I did grow up in a white community.
Your favorite holiday?
Thanksgiving.
How long does it take you to get ready?
5 minutes.
Oh, I'm so jealous. On a scale of 1 to 10, how good of a driver are you?
8.
That's a deep breath. Fill in the blank. Taylor Swift is...
Okay.
Question mark? At what age do you want to retire?
I used to think 55 was the dream.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. It's hard. I can't really slow down. It's hard. So
yeah, I would want to retire if I was like cleaning porta potties for a living. But I mean, if I was making wine,
I can't imagine you not making wine.
Yeah,
yeah.
I can't fathom that.
Next step is I'm going to Spain to start something over there.
Got it.
We're gonna buy a little hacienda over there. Just a few.
So we are investing in some wine in Spain.
Sure. Let's go.
Okay. All right.
Super
good.
Super affordable.
Good.
By the way.
In. I'll go with you, too. Last question. Is it wrong for a vegetarian to eat animal crackers?
No. wish they ate meat.
You're welcome. We'll see how drunk we are. All right.
Yeah. Well, good. And the irony is no bottle has been killed, but we did transition to, I say, it's so sad to say, it's like we've transitioned to our last bottle of the.
That's so sad.
What are we drinking now, Ed?
You know, we're going to finish up with one of my favorite regions of Spain. Yeah. It's called the Piorrato. Piorrato was the original name to the Piorat region in Spain, and this is my Quérignon-driven blend. Definitely a big boy, needs a little rack of lamb, something gamey.
To help definitely with the acidity.
Mm-hmm. So this is 75% Quérignon, 12 Garnacha, 7% Cabernet Sauvignon, and 6% Syrah. Like I said earlier, I fell in love with the guys from the Piorat in the Monzon region back in 2005. They were cool as they could get. They were speaking to me in Spanish, which was way cool, and trying to understand what their methods of winemaking. And it sounded and it was very similar to the West Side Paso. So, but they were blending uniquely different than West Side Paso. So I ended up like following them. And if the pandemic wouldn't have happened last year, I would have had one of my favorite producers from the Piorat region, Claude de Lebac, at my place last year. We're still hoping to reschedule that. So, but yeah, it's
funny
delicious.
When people speak Spanish to me, it's not as cool because I don't know what they're saying.
What are they saying? Pincha huera?
they're calling you white girl.
Oh, I knew basically. That one. Damn middle school students. I tried on Saturday to speak Spanish to you. Remember when I was like, que hora?
That's true.
You're welcome.
That's true.
And you answered me in English. So
whatever. You know, I just wanted to make sure you understood. I'm all about saving time. And not repeating our
saving hora?
Yeah, saving hora.
You're
thank
welcome.
You. Yeah.
I'm killing it.
It's saving tiempo, but that's fine.
Oh shit.
It's okay.
Necesito
you know what?
Tortillas de harina, por favor.
Yes.
Wow. That's all. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Vamos a hacer buñuelos.
Yeah.
What's that mean?
Buñuelos, they're donuts.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Now I learned something new.
Yeah.
I worked in a Mexican food restaurant for about 2 years. And the tortilla lady Maria. She knew zero English, like nothing, not even like a hint of English. And so the only thing we had to learn really was to say what kind of tortillas we needed her to make. So I knew how to say, necesito tortillas de maíz, por favor. Dos, tres. That's all I would ever say to Maria or hola.
Which is funny because you sounded a lot more demanding when you were talking about the tortillas de maíz. But then when you said hi, you were much more demure.
Hola. Yeah. Well, yeah. When you're in a hurry, you yell at Maria. You say, necesito tortillas de harina, por favor.
At least you said please.
Wow. I know. They told us we had to. So
I can't even fathom Megan yelling at me.
Not yet. The day
Not
is
yet.
Young.
The day is young.
Isn't it funny how demanding it comes when she translates to Spanish?
Yeah.
Sounds a little more demanding.
It does.
I need to work on my inflections.
A little bit.
So, necesito.
There you go.
Yeah. De harina, yeah. Por favor.
You should sing it. There's your next OnlyFans video.
That's my new album.
You can charge $2 per view. So, Edgar, you have a tasting room.
Yep.
But you don't have a winery. So yes, you have you make
wine. I have
wine.
A facility.
You have a facility.
Sure.
Sorry. You have but you don't own your own vineyards. In other words, a facility or a tasting room on those vineyards. Sorry, for clarification purposes. Yeah. There's so much freedom in that because you can do whatever the fuck you want with wine. You can buy from here. If you knew that the season is better there and the grapes are growing better there, you can buy from there. Where some folks, they're kind of stuck and like, oh, fuck, we had a fire. It trashed half of our yield. Those kind of things. Would you consider ever having your own, or do you just want to stay with how you're doing it now? Because there's got to be some wild freedom to that. There's got to be some envy from the people that are – there has to be a little bit of envy. You can do whatever the hell you want.
Well, I mean, like the fun thing about when I started learning about grape producers, they were not just necessarily the vineyard owner and started farming it and making it, right? Like Manfred Krenko from San Ecuador did not own his vineyards that he owns now. He started buying from other people. A lot of my friends in Paso Robles didn't have their own vineyards. Like even Eric Jensen from Booker, he came in, developed this vineyard, but he started buying from other people to just kind of start going. Now he has his own vineyard. So is a luxury aspect of playing with the different regions around, because like I buy a little bit of Santa Barbara fruit that goes into my songs project, and it's so cool, like, because that Santa Barbara, Santa Rita Hills is distinctively different than Paso Robles. Sandy soils, a little bit of more coastal influence to it and stuff. And so I used to buy fruit from Monterey County too. Whole different microclimate up there, different soils. So, yeah, it is something uniquely that, you know, everybody loves to drink the Prisoner from Dave Finney.
Everybody loves to drink Prisoner.
Yeah, the Owen Swift project is a project.
Except Prisoners. They drink hooch made in toilets.
They try to make their own
ironically.
Hooch.
Prisoners do not drink Prisoner.
They
do.
Yeah. Go figure.
Wish.
Go figure.
They wish.
But the fun thing that Dave Finney did from Owen Swift was he never had vineyards. He went to work a harvest and saw how hard it was, and he put in his time and everything, and he started making his own wine. He started buying grapes from here and there, and before you know it, he's not even, like, doing 100% to the varietal vineyard designation that, like, the romantic old world used to do. Like, you buy, you know, Chateau Margaux from their vineyard and whatever from that particular year, and you know, it wows you. California was the rebel producers that – we learned that, yeah, we don't have to, like, develop our own vineyards. There is something romantic about owning your own vines and taking care of them and you know, being there the one nurturing them. It is something that I'm open to the idea. I only have one little guy, so I don't want to put all that pressure on him.
There's already some pressure on him, dude.
There, like, is.
Who is this guy?
Like, poor Bronny James. He's like really playing hard to make his dad happy, you know? It's and there is a lot of pressure in there. You're almost like, dude, please just study something else except winemaking.
I love my little guy's name, Evan, and Evan is super awesome. He makes me, you know, like, keep doing what I'm doing stronger every day and ambitiously just keeps me want to give him
wine.
So much more option than I ever had in life, and that was kind of the fun thing. I am going to naturally give him more wine. I made a cuvée for him on his birth year. He has like 16 cases of 1.5 liter bottles.
Mm. Wow. He and I need to become friends. Yeah, at what point are you – because I remember my grandfather grew up between Spain and France, and his family made wine in the south of France. And he would tell the stories of when he was a kid, they didn't drink water at the table. He would drink watered-down wine. Mm-hmm. At what point do kids get to taste it? And I know – I'm not – let's – fuck the legalities of it. Let's just talk – like I'm just – because I remember as a kid, my mom would just like, here, try a mojito.
Yeah.
You know, just try it. And I loved mojitos. And my dad was like, here, try this Schlitz. And I was like, that shit's fucking terrible.
My parents would never have done that. Mm-mm.
Your dad would have given you a Fireball.
Nope.
If it existed back then.
If it did. I don't think he would have.
You're always like, he's already had some. No, I'm just kidding.
Unfortunately, he has mistakenly out of mom's canteen.
Oh, yes. He threw mom under the bus right at the end of the first hour. The only thing we don't get back in life is time. And I thank you so much, Ed. I thank you so much to people at home for spending a little bit of time with us here listening to Kill the Bottle podcast. Much love. How do we find Ed's wines? You go to bodegatheedgar.com. You go to @bodegatheedgar on Instagram. You want to check out Song Wines, go to @songwines and become part of La Familia. Really have the opportunity to check out Edgar's wines and support somebody who loves what they do and really started from the bottom and fuck like Tupac on the way to the top, dog.
Always,
thank you for being here.
Always. It's the American way.
That's right.
Thank you so much.
That's right.
And live show at your place pretty soon.
Hell yeah.
Awesome. Thanks.